I shall prepare a place for you at the table." The robot rotated around and glided silently out of the observation deck. I looked back to the view. I'm not quite sure what I was expecting at that point, but it couldn't have been anything at all like the thing that confronted me. We had passed through the upper ceiling of the embarkation chamber, but the anchor point terminal was much taller than that, so that we were still ascending through the upper reaches of the building. And it was here, I realized, that the cultists had achieved the highest expression of their obsession with Sky Houseman. After his crucifixion, they had preserved the body, embalming it and then encasing it in something that had the grey-green luster of lead, and they had mounted him here, on a great up-thrusting prow that extended inward from one interior wall until it almost touched the thread. It made Houseman's corpse look like the figurehead fixed beneath the bowsprit of a great sailing ship. They had stripped him to the waist, spread his arms wide, and fixed him to a cross-shaped alloy spar. His legs were bound together, but a nail had been driven through the wrist of his right hand, not the palm. That was a detail the stigma-inducing virus got wrong, and a much larger piece of metal had been rammed through the upper part of his severed left arm. These details, and the expression of numb agony on Houseman's face, had been rendered mercifully indistinct by the encasing process, but while it was not really possible to read his features, every nuance of his pain was written into the arc of his neck. The way his jaw was clenched as if in the throes of electrocution. They should have electrocuted him, I thought. It would have been kinder, no matter the crimes he had committed. But that would have been too simple. They were not just executing a man who had done terrible things, but glorifying a man who had also given them a whole world. In crucifying him, they were showing their adoration as fervently as their hate. It had been like that ever since. The elevator tracked past Sky, coming within meters of him, and I felt myself flinching, wishing that we could be clear of him as quickly as possible. It was as if the vast space was an echo chamber, reverberating with endless pain. My palm itched. I rubbed it against the handrail, closing my eyes until we were free of the anchor point terminal, rising through night. "More wine, Mr. Mirabelle?" asked the fox-like wife of the aristocrat sitting opposite me. "No," I said, dabbing my lips politely with the napkin. "If you don't mind, I'll retire. I'd like to watch the view while we climb." "That's a shame," the woman said, pursing her own lips in a pout of disappointment. "Yes," said her husband. "We'll miss your stories, Tanner." I smiled. In truth, I'd done little more than grimace my way through an hour of stilted small talk while we dined. I had salted the conversation with the odd anecdote now and then, but only to fill the awkward silences which fell across the table when one or other of the participants made what might, within the ever-shifting loom of aristocratic etiquette, be construed as an indelicate remark. More than once I had to resolve arguments between the northern and southern factions, and in the process of doing so I had become the group's default speaker. My disguise must not have been absolutely convincing, for even the northerners seemed to realize that there was not automatically any affiliation between me and the southerners. It hardly mattered, though. The disguise had convinced the woman in the ticket booth that I was an aristocrat, making her reveal more than she might have done otherwise. It had allowed me to blend in with these aristocrats, too, but sooner or later I would be able to discard it. I was not a wanted man, after all. Just someone with a shady past and a few shady connections. There had been no harm in calling myself